Zion Nissen, Monday the 7th of April, Rabbi Moshe Akiva Brandeis, Seder night, getting the message across.
Bishus Mashver, all regulars and newcomers to the program. There's a popular Magid Shir lecturer in Yerushalayim, in Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. His name is Rabbi Yaakov Osher Sinclair. Originally he's from London. He's currently a neighbor of mine in Yerushalayim. And he tells of a childhood friend, a friend of his from London, an acquaintance. He's not Jewish, in fact, he's Christian. Who once said to him, "You know, I'm jealous of you." He says, "Why?" He says, "I'll tell you why. I'm Christian. The reason why I'm Christian is because my father was Christian. And the reason why he was is because his father was and his grandfather was. And we trace ourselves back to our ancestors, who, because a bunch of Normans went over across the English Channel and managed to convince them that the religion they were currently observing, which consisted of painting themselves blue with woad and bashing each other over the head, amongst some other strange rituals, was not as interesting as Christianity. So, our family are Christians." He says, "But you have the Leil HaSeder. And at the Leil HaSeder, you sit there with the family, and you give over a tradition that has been passed on from generation to generation, father to son, an unbroken chain, all the way back to eyewitnesses. You trace yourselves back to people who actually testified the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt, crossing over the Yamsuf, and then finally receiving the Torah and hearing Hashem's voice himself. That's your tradition. That's why I'm jealous of you." Now the truth is, we don't have to hear this. We don't need a goy to tell us this. We know this. And not only do we know this intrinsically. If you think about it, Pesach is it's a taxing Yom Tov. There's a lot to do. It's a very busy time of the year for the average Jewish household. And if we had to choose a Yom Tov in which to bring our families together and start bringing our children home, I think most of us might choose either Chanukah, perhaps Purim, or one of the other Yom Tovim, and Pesach would probably be the last one on the list. And nevertheless, people go at great lengths to bring home each one to the extent of his ability, to bring back family, sometimes grandchildren, sometimes even great-grandchildren, sitting at the Seder. So Klal Yisrael know this is the Yom Tov of Messiah, this is the Yom Tov of tradition, where we have an unbroken chain which we want to pass on to our children, and we want as much as possible to have as much of the family as we can to be at the Seder so that the tradition continues, so that the golden chain continues on. Now, the message of the Seder, we all know the message of the Seder. It's Emunah, it's telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Perhaps we can take the message of the Seder to a new level. Perhaps we can take it to a deeper level. The Egyptian slavery, Shibud Mitzrayim, really started with Avram Avinu at the Bris Ben Absalom, when he says to Hashem, "Bamo Eda." Hashem tells him that your children will inherit Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael. And Avram Avinu says, "Bamo Eda, how do I know?" He asked for a sign. Says the Yalkut Shimoni, the reaction was, the Yalkut Shimoni brings down, the reaction of the Rebbeinu Shlom was, "Chayecha, you asked for a sign, Chayecha Yodea Teda." I'll give you a double lashon. Yodea Teda, know you should know that your children will have to go down to Mitzrayim and be subservient to another nation, to a nation they don't recognize. They'll have to go down and have to have Shibud Mitzrayim. 400 years. In the end it was 210 years, actually under Shibud Mitzrayim. It was considered 400 years of rulership under a foreign nation. And to understand what happened here, is that Avram Avinu, on his level of Emunah, on his Avram Avinu, the patriarch of Klal Yisrael, the father of the nation, made on his level, it's a split hair's breadth of a mistake. But he asked for a sign. He said, "Bamo Eda, how do I know? Give me a sign, Ribbono Shel Olam. Give me a sign that this will actually take place." That request for a sign was a a huge reaction from the Rebbeinu Shleim. There'll be a galus, and the whole Klal Yisrael will have to go through this galus. Because as the father of the nation, as the foundation of Klal Yisrael, if there's even a scratch, if you take a skyscraper, and in the foundations of the skyscraper you have a very, very fine, a very, very small weakness in the foundation, there's a danger of the whole edifice collapsing, the whole thing falling together. So Avraham Avinu, being the forerunner, being the father of Klal Yisrael, being the patriarch, if there's any scratch in the father, it has to be rectified before the nation becomes a nation. And so Klal Yisrael find themselves in Mitzrayim. And they're in Mitzrayim, and they'll mentor Shari Tumah, and many of them have assimilated into Egyptian culture. Many of us talk about the physical holocaust that they went through in Mitzrayim, but truthfully speaking, there was a great spiritual holocaust. They were on Memtah Shari Tumah. Many of them had assimilated into the Egyptian culture. Many of them stopped giving bris milah to their children, as they state. And 4/5 of them wouldn't come out. During Makas Choshech, 4/5 wouldn't have the schus to even exit Mitzrayim. They had to stay in Mitzrayim and die there. And so we have a nation who have to still rectify the problem. So Hashem gives them two mitzvahs. Which two mitzvahs? Pesach and Milah. What's the significance of these two mitzvahs? There are so many mitzvahs which we can give Klal Yisrael so they should strengthen themselves. Why particularly Pesach and Milah? Pesach was the most undiplomatic thing to do in Mitzrayim. We have to understand what went on there. This was Pesach, the sheep was the idol of Mitzrayim. The sheep was the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim. To take the sheep and tie it to your bed as slaves in a country in which you've been under them for so many years is the most politically incorrect thing to do. If you're trying to get out of that country, you want to still, you know, keep on, you know, just make sure they keep at bay, and then you can leave the country. And the Rebbeinu Shem asks them specifically, take the deity of Mitzrayim, take the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim, and tie it to your bed. The Shabbos coming is called Shabbos HaGadol. Why is it called the Great Shabbos? Because then Yud Nisan fell on a Shabbos. Yud Nisan was the day they took the sheep and tied it to their beds. That was considered a great miracle, that they were able to take a sheep and tie it to their beds, and the Mitzrayim ground their teeth, as the Medrash tells us. And they weren't able to say anything. That's a fantastic miracle. That was an absolute ness, which till this very day, that Shabbos, because then it fell on Shabbos, the Shabbos before Pesach, is called Shabbos HaGadol. So this was an acid test for Klal Yisrael. It would be much like someone coming into Auschwitz and going over to some of the inmates in the bunkers and telling them that, you know, liberation is not far away, the Allies are gaining in on all fronts. Perhaps, he passes some effigies, some big dolls that are lookalikes of Eichmann and Mengele and some of the others, Yimach Shemom. And you say to them, hang these up on the gallows in Auschwitz, hang them up outside your barracks. It would be emotionally, psychologically and physically impossible to do. Besides being suicide, it would also be impossible to do. As people who have been under the Nazis for so long, you cannot take these people, these dolls, and hang them up. To take the sheep of Mitzrayim when you've been a slave for so long is an impossible thing to do. It's almost impossible. To take that sheep and tie it to your bed, and when people ask you what you're doing, you say, I'm going to slaughter this thing. That's the equivalent of Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim. And that was the acid test Hashem gives them. Will you pass this test? Do you rely on me? Do you do things without question? Can you accept my reign without questions? It seems to be the most ridiculous thing to do, the most impossible thing to do, but will you do it anyway? And the other mitzvah is Milah. Pesach is external. Pesach is to take the sheep, everyone sees what you're doing, you take the sheep, you tie it to your bed, and you slaughter it in public. We also have to know that Klal Yisrael are internally going to accept the Rebbeinu Shleilam. That's Bris Milah. That's in the private area of their lives, they're also going to accept the rule of the Rebbeinu Shleilam. So now we have a test for Klal Yisrael. Before they leave Mitzrayim, will they pass the test? If they can pass the test externally and internally to accept Hashem's rule without question, then they have a schus to leave Mitzrayim. A similar idea we find in a Mishnah in Shabbos. The Mishnah says, Lo yikra lo'ir haner. A person shouldn't read on Shabbos by candlelight. If you look at the Gemara, you'd base on the base in Masechet Shabbos, the Gemara says, why not? Shemo yate haner. Brings from the Brisa, perhaps he will, in those days they had oil lamps, and perhaps he will be absent-minded and push the lamp a little bit and the oil will fall towards the wick. And Isser Shabbos. Says Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, I can read without making that mistake. I don't get carried away. I will read and I will not get carried away. I won't push the lamp. So he read and the Gemara said that he almost touched the lamp. So he said, Kama gedolim dibri chachomim she'omru lo yikra la'ir haner. Says the Gemara, okay, you almost made a mistake and you shouldn't have. But what's this last exclamation of Kama gedolim dibri chachomim who said lo yikra la'ir haner? They said many, many different, we know many, many halachas which are to safeguard a person from being over Yisurim. Why all of a sudden here just because he was almost going to make a mistake? Says the Gra, we have to read it differently. He says, Kama gedolim dibri chacham, that in the Mishnah, all they said was, lo yikra la'ir haner, without telling us a reason. Without saying, Shem o yate haner. They just said, don't read by candlelight. Because as soon as we start knowing reasons, we start reasoning with it. We start making calculations. I won't be like that. I'm okay. It won't happen to me. We make calculations. Kama gedolim dibri chacham, that they left out the reason. That they give us halachas without reasons. We have to keep the Torah. Klal Yisrael keeps the Torah because the Ribbono Shel Olam told us to. When we have reasons, we're very happy to hear the reasons. But the reason why we keep the Torah is because Hashem told us to. And Klal Yisrael had to pass this test. They had to accept the Torah, Hashem's will, without question. You want to have reasons? That can come later. Now the question arises, why did it have to be before they left? L'chayr would be a gishmo gishmak for Klal Yisrael to see the light at the end of the tunnel, to begin leaving Mitzrayim, start the Exodus, let them see a little bit of light, let them get out of this terrible, terrible Mitzrayim that they've been under for so many years, and then give them mitzvahs. They'll surely do it so much happier, they'll be so much happier to do the mitzvahs of Pesach HaMila on the way out. Why'd they have to win when they were still in Mitzrayim? I believe the answer is that in order for the nation to be Roy, to be the Klal Yisrael, and to be the nation that accepts the Torah, it had to be a nation that will, in all circumstances, in all situations, be willing to do the Ribbono Shel Olam's Ratzon. And here, I have a story to illustrate this idea, which is that there's a great mashpia in America, and a father came in to him and said, he has a son who's about to leave the Derech HaTorah. He's on his last tragic step of leaving the fold. Can you help me out? So he says, come in with your son. So he comes in with his son, who hardly looks like a Yid anymore. And he says to him, do you go to baseball games? So he says, yeah, sure. He says, did you go recently? He says, yeah. He says, did you go to the most recent game? He says, yeah. Who won the game? The Yankees. By how much? Oh, they won by a crazy amount of points. He says, were you there at the end? Did you see the win? He says, no, I left before the end. He says, how do you know they won? Because everybody knows. It's across the media. Everyone's talking about it. Everybody knows it was a crazy game. They were losing from the beginning, the other team, and Yankees were winning from the beginning. He says, so why didn't you stay to the end? Because it was predictable, because there was no chance of the other team winning anyway, so I gave up halfway like many of the other people in the audience. So he says, did the players stay till the end? So he says, Rabbi, let me just explain to you what a baseball game is. He says, there's players and there's spectators. The spectators can come and go at will. They decide, you know, weather conditions and perhaps, you know, if the game's not good or if it's not interesting, they can leave in the middle. The players, it makes no difference. They are the game. They stay from beginning to end no matter what. Whether they know they're going to lose, whatever the matter, it doesn't make a difference what's going on. They stay from beginning to end. So the Mashpia looks at the boy and he says to him, in Yiddishkeit it's the same thing. He says there are players and there are spectators. The spectators, it's according to the situation. has to fit into their comfort zone. As long as I'm comfortable with Yiddishkeit, you know, it's working out for me, life is good, I'll stay. As soon as it gets a little bit uncomfortable, it's not exactly the way I'd like it to be, they leave. He said, then we have players. Then we have the people who feel that they are the game. Those people stay whatever happens. Whatever happens, they're going to stay from beginning to end. They will be playing the game. He said, you've got to decide where you belong, a spectator or a player. The Ribbono Shel Olam needed a nation of players. He needed a nation that felt that they were the game, that they made the difference. Klal Yisrael are the core of the world, and they had to make a difference and realize that they are, that they make the difference. So Klal Yisrael are ready for the next level. So that's why it had to be before they left Mitzrayim, right? That's why it had to be before they left Mitzrayim, because they have to be people that whatever happens, in every situation, every circumstance that comes their way, they have to be willing to stick to the Derech Hashem, to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So therefore, the test had to come before they leave Mitzrayim. And now Klal Yisrael are ready to move on to the next level. So they're standing at the Yam Suf. They've left Mitzrayim. They've already proven, those who were zeicha to leave, have already proven that they are people who will accept the Ribbono Shel Olam's rule without question. And now they're standing at the Yam Suf, and the Yam Suf is raging in front of them. Behind them are the Mitzrayim, on the other side they have wild animals. There's no way out. And Klal Yisrael says, the Torah, by its Aku, they called out to the Ribbono Shel Olam. They do what every Yid would do in such a situation. You turn to Hashem and you scream, get me out of this. There's nowhere to go. Says Rashi, Tofsu umnus avosam biyadam, they grabbed hand to the craftsmanship of their fathers, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and called out to the Ribbono Shel Olam. They davened. Why does Rashi say from the Medrash that they grabbed onto the craftsmanship of their fathers? They davened. Every Yid would daven. What was significant about this tefillah? So I heard from a Magid Shir in Yerushalayim, a Magid Shir in the Meir, B'Shem, and I can't remember who he said it, B'Shem. He said that Tofsu Umnus Avosam Biyadam, Klal Yisrael davened now as the Avos always davened. Meaning, Klal Yisrael felt that there was no way out. There's nowhere to go. There's Mitzrayim chasing them from behind, wild animals on the other side, and there's a river raging in front of them. All three are trying to swallow them up alive. And they called out to Hashem. But when the Avos davened, every tefillah, even when it was comfortable, even when life was good, financially stable, the nachas from the kids, everything was okay, they weren't running around the world, they daven like that. That's how they daven. Knowing that everything that happens is the Ribbono Shel Olam. Knowing that even in this situation, Hashem is causing everything to happen. So Klal Yisrael, in a situation where they feel there's no way out, davened in the way that the Avos always davened. If you look at the examples Rashi brings, he says, Avraham, when he went back to daven for Sodom, Yitzchak, when he went out into the field, Yaakov, when he just passed Hamaru and he said, how can I pass the place where my father's davened and not daven? All three weren't the most, you know, the most desperate tefillah of those others. Yitzchak doesn't even say what he davened for. Yaakov just wanted to go back to a place where his fathers had davened. And Avraham, he had already davened for Sodom. He's already going back to the same place. So Rashi brings three examples of regular tefillahs, relatively regular tefillahs, that even then, the obvious, when they davened, these regular tefillahs, they davened as if they were in a desperate situation, knowing there's no other way out. So in Mitzrayim, they accepted the reign of Hashem without questions, and at the Yam Suf, they brought it to a new level. The new level is to understand that there's nothing but the Ribbono Shel Olam. To know that there's no other way in the world, and no other thing that exists outside of the Ratzon Hashem. On Seder night, we give this message over. We give the message that the emunah that we have in the Ribbono Shel Olam is absolute. That we do what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants without questions. And we take that to a second level, knowing that there's nothing else but the Ribbono Shel Olam. Anything that happens, and every tefillah that we daven, is knowing that only the Ribbono Shel Olam can help us, whatever our situation is. And if you look at the most, perhaps the greatest moment of question and answer, the greatest moment of the Seder, of father talking to son, is when the child asks the four questions. Fear kashas. The son comes and he asks four questions. And then the father answers, Avodim hayinu l'pari b'mitzrayim. The son has asked, Why do we eat matzah? Why do we eat maror? Why do we lean? Why do we dip? And the father says, because we were slaves in Mitzrayim, and we left Mitzrayim, and we came under, and Hashem took us out. How's that answering the question? I've seen answers to this, but I was never fully satisfied. And in working through this idea, the answer came very simply. It's very poshut, I believe. The son has asked why we do things differently on this night. Why are we doing all these things? Why are we leaning? Why are we dipping? And the father says, Avodim hayinu l'pari b'mitzrayim, we were slaves to Pari in Mitzrayim. And what happened? Vayetzienu Hashem alikeinu, Hashem took us out. You want to know why we do these things? Because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and therefore we do what He asks of us. That's why we do it. You want to know why? Because Hashem took us out, and therefore we do what He asks of us. We're His avodim. You want to know why? Later on we'll explain Matz as well, Shema. There are very nice ideas of the dough not rising. We have nice ideas of the Mara being bitter herbs. We'll have many explanations for it. Why we do it? Why is this night different? Because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim and He told us what to do, and we do what He says. That's why. So the message we give when the child asks the questions is, we're Avdei Hashem. We are Avadim of the Ribbono Shel Olam. We do what He tells us to do. A person who lives a life of no questions, and lives a life of relying on the Ribbono Shel Olam, can see sometimes miracles, can see the teva is then meshubba to him, the yamsuf can split for him. There's a great story with a woman in America, and she was living in an old age home, in a nursing home as they call it there, and she had a religious son living a great distance from where she lived, a religious man. They kept in touch for once in a while, not very often. They had some sort of communication. And one day, the son gets a call from the nursing home, from the old age home. Secretary's on the phone, and she tells him that she has bad news for him. His mother, Mrs. Horowitz, hasn't been feeling well for the last few days. And she breaks it slowly. He understands what's coming next. And she's passed on to the next world. She says that, I understand you live long distance. It's a long distance flight. And it's difficult for you to come in a short time. So therefore, we begin the preparations. Obviously, I understand that you're Jewish and religious. It will be a Jewish Tahara process, etc. She knows who to call. The Chevra Kedisha. By the time you come, everything running smoothly, hopefully we'll be at the funeral, and you'll be able to give your hesped, your eulogy. And so he books the first ticket he can fly out with. He flies out to where his mother used to live. He comes in. It's taka already. The process already begun. He comes in time for the levaya. He gives the hesped, tears kriya, begins sitting shiva, and then flies back to where he lives. A few days later, he gets a phone call. He picks up the phone, and he hears his mother on the line. So he tries to compose himself and says, how are you? You know, not sure which world she's calling from. And she says, you know, how are you? So he sounds a little bit strange on the phone, and she starts getting worried about him. He says, no, everything's fine. He holds on to his chair and tries to continue the conversation as normal. Puts down the phone. He's sweating. He's shivering. He calls up the old age home and says, what's wrong with you people? Where was I last week? And how did my mother... So she checks the papers. Oh my, we have two Mrs. Horowitzes. And you weren't there for identification of the body. So, you know, everything was run very smoothly. I apologize profusely. So he says, you can apologize to me, but you've got a more uncomfortable call to make now to the family of the person who's already been buried. And it's been a week and a half since. Okay, so she doesn't do the phone call. She gets the manager to take responsibility and make the phone call, obviously. He calls up, and a man answers the phone, and he says, I've got bad news for you. He says, come on, spit it out. So he says, your mother's not been well for a while. Okay, I get the idea. So he says, no, I've got worse news. He says, what can be worse than dying? So he says, she's already, you know, we're past already the funeral. What else? We've buried her for about 1.5 weeks. So the man's quiet on the phone and he says, was it a Jewish funeral? So he says, Yes. Yeah, it was all Jewish. I know your mother's Jewish. We respect it. Did someone tear Kriya for her? Yes, someone told Kriya. Kaddish? Yes, Kaddish was said Shiva. Someone said Shiva for her. We had the wrong person. Mom, you won! He thinks maybe he lost his sanity. And he says, you know, what's... Are you okay? He says, yeah, it's just... My mother was very religious. And I left Yiddishkeit completely. I'm anti-religious, anti-Jewish. And we've had an ongoing argument fight for many years. My mother kept saying, I want a religious burial. I want someone to say Kaddish for me. And I'm her only son. I always made fun of her. You're not going to get any of it. You're not going to be around anymore. And I'm going to see to it that you don't get a Jewish funeral. No one's going to sit Shiva for you. No one's going to tear Kriya for you. No one's going to say Kaddish for you. It's going to be totally irreligious. And she kept saying, I'm not arguing with you. I'm davening to Hashem. And I rely on him. And I kept telling her, there's no way out. There's no way. You're not going to be here. It's going to be me. I'm your only son. And there's nothing you can do about it. And this was every time we spoke, we had this argument. And she was never arguing with me. She just kept saying the same thing. I rely on the Ribbono Shel Olam. Says, Mom, you won. When a person relies on the Ribbono Shel Olam, when he accepts the rule, the reign of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we stand there and accept the Ribbono Shel Olam's rule and rely on him completely, we can see miracles, even down to this very day. Shkach.